And actually, in hindsight, I remember being younger and watching women who wore suits go up escalators in shopping centres and thought they were really cool and always wanted to be like an office-y, like business-y type person, and never really realised that that is kind of what I do now. And I am a lady that goes into businesses with, you know, lots of important people and sits and has conversations, and I'm kind of like, oh yeah, I am that person that I saw on an escalator.
I love that image. All right, there's a woman in a suit going up an escalator. That is what I want to do.
Yeah. And now I like to think I'm that person that goes up escalators in pencil suits with really cool heels, but the heels...
And there's a teenager looking going, I want to be that woman.
Well, maybe.
Welcome back to Astronaut to Zookeeper podcast. I'm the art teacher formerly known as Miss Willis, and I'm on a mission to catch up with former students to see what career paths they've taken and what advice they would give their 14-year-old self, all with the aim to open up the imagination for young people when it comes to life after school. And I'm joined by the very lovely Hannah Milstead-Bowdry. That's correct, isn't it?
That is correct, yeah.
Got it. Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. Thanks for coming on the show.
It's an absolute pleasure. It's so fun to be here.
So can you tell us what you do for a living, Hannah?
So I am an HR director, and I'm also an HR consultant, and I predominantly work in an organisation that supports adults with learning disabilities. But then as an HR consultant, I go over to other companies and charities and churches predominantly and help them resolve any HR queries they might have. And I kind of work independently to support any employment law conundrums, bits and pieces like that. So it's very varied, but very fun.
Wow. Okay, so I've got lots of questions about that, including what HR actually is, but we'll come back to that.
Yeah, yeah.
But can I take you back to when you were young, and can you remember what you wanted to be when you were little, when you were like 5 years old?
Yeah, I actually wanted to be a ballet dancer.
Did you?
I did, and I had a video that my godfather bought me, which was called Nights at the Royal Ballet. And it was from the Royal Opera House, and I used to dance in front of it. And then a couple of years ago, my dad found that video on DVD and got it for me for Christmas. I obviously didn't dance in front of the TV when I watched it again as a 28-year-old. Yeah, so that's what I wanted to be. But when I started taking ballet lessons, it became quite obvious that probably wasn't going to be my career.
So as a teenager, did you have an idea of what you wanted to do after school as a teenager?
You know what? No, I didn't. And I think I probably represent all of the teenagers that were very middle of the road, like could have done anything. You know, there could have been, I wasn't particularly outstanding at one thing that meant it was really clear that I really wanted to go and do that. But I was average and to good at most things at a level where I could have really invested in it and then made it a really good career. So I think, yeah, that was always a bit of a predicament for me. I could have gone into music and the arts more than I did. I could have gone into like more academia more than I did. And so I kind of bumbled around a bit as a teenager, wondering which direction to go in before finding what I do now, which is what I love. Mm. And actually, in hindsight, I remember being younger and watching women who wore suits go up escalators in shopping centres and thought they were really cool and always wanted to be like an office-y, like business-y type person, and never really realised that that is kind of what I do now. And I am a lady that goes into businesses with, you know, lots of important people and sits and has conversations, and I'm kind of like, oh yeah, I am that person that I saw on an escalator.
I love that image. All right, there's a woman in a suit going up an escalator. That is what I want to do. Yeah. I love that.
It was. That's, and I just cool. thought she looked so cool in like a really cool pencil suit with like really cool heels, and I was like, that's obviously the ambition, but I didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
And now I like to think I'm that person that goes up escalators in pencil suits with really cool heels, but the heels...
And there's a teenager looking going,
well, maybe.
Yeah. Yes, Hannah. Yeah. I love it. What were you like at school? Can you describe what your sort of personality was like at school?
I don't know. You could probably describe it better than I could. I
remember you being always positive. You were positive all the time.
Yeah.
This is what I remember from you. You would give everything a go. You were always well behaved, but really positive as well, and strong and confident. That's what I remember from you. I don't know if you have a different.
No, I think I do remember that, and I think I always remember wanting to stand up for the marginalised as well, and being quite mm-hmm. like fight for your rights. I think there was a end of year award ceremony or something, and I still have the certificate. I found it the other day when I moved house. Where I actually got Miss Fight for Your Rights. So I think I became quite known as being the person that would speak out if there was something wrong. Sometimes it would land me in trouble because I would speak out out of turn. Sometimes it would be the right thing. I'm still learning about the times when I might be speaking out of turn. I still think you don't really ever know that for sure. But that I still think that was who I was. Yeah, always positive. But school was hard. Like, as a teenager, I still look back at school and we had the most fantastic school experience. But, you know, I do think as a teenager, school is a hard place to be. And I was definitely a teenager that found that as well. You know, as well as being really positive and really bubbly, I also found it, you know, I have memories of it being really tough and not being an enjoyable place and not wanting to go sometimes. And so I'm definitely, yeah, I think I represent that teenager that I hope resonates with a lot of people listening.
Okay, so let's move on to your job now. So if you had to describe what it is you do, so an HR consultant to an alien life form, so in its simplest possible explanation, what would you say?
The basic fundamental of what I do is I make sure that the right people are in the right place, doing the right thing at the right time in a workforce. And manage anything that comes along with that where that isn't happening.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
I help put people in the right place at the first point, which is like recruiting people into the business. And I may shuffle people around if it's, you know, not working. And then I do a lot of the exit processes for when it really isn't working, which isn't the most fun mm-hmm. part of the job. And all the bits that kind of fall in between that about performance management and engaging employees and making sure they have all the right they heard and that they have benefits that they want and all of those things. Yes. I am and very much shaping a positive work culture as well.
So HR stands for?
Human resources.
I was talking to my dad the other day and he was saying, oh, it used to be called something else.
Personnel.
Or,
yeah. So when I first started, I used to call myself personnel. I preferred that term, but it's just not used in the industry much anymore. So people didn't really know why I was using it, but I much prefer it as a very, it's a bit more down to earth, isn't it, to say you're a personnel manager than you're a...
Yeah, there's something, I don't know, I mean, there's something about human resources, it's quite...
I know, it makes people sound like they're just a resource.
Right, yeah. And maybe taking the human element, ironically, by adding the word human, perhaps taking the human element out of it, and perhaps people feel that, so it's interesting. So I agree, I think personnel is better.
So much nicer. And there are some organisations I work with where, like one of my clients is a really large client and they call it the director of people, which I think is much better.
From your point of view, from your opinion, why do you think it is so important to have HR people in all organisations and such? What is it that's key for you?
I think it just embeds good practice and good understanding of how you respect people from the top down. Mm-hmm. It is just really important that people feel nourished and, you know, well led, and that they're equipped and they're engaged, and that their kind of talent management is appropriate, and all of those things are really essential to developing and actually being better. Like, if you don't like where you work, you leave, right? Like, that's what most people do. So my job is to make sure that people like where they work so that they don't leave.
So you said that you specifically, in one of your roles, you work to help adults with learning difficulties within their workplace. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so learning disabilities. So it's it's actually a family business of mine that my mum started, and I never intended to work there. I actually always didn't want to. My initial plan as a teenager was, I don't want anything to do with family business. It's not me. But then I realised the skills I had could really benefit it and could make it, could sort of develop it into something really fabulous. So my sister and I had to pitch to my mum to be involved because she wasn't keen either. So we had to do like a business pitch. And yeah, it was so funny over the dining room table. And we kind of came on board, and we have two residential services where we have six people that live there all the time, 24/7. And we have two day provisions, which are creative therapeutic activity day centres. So we do loads of art. You can come and do some art with us.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that later. So we have loads of kind of art sessions and music sessions, like cooking, you know, life skills, basically. And we see around 350 people a week on across our two sites with learning disabilities in Surrey. So it's really thriving. We've been doing loads of online sessions, obviously, because we haven't actually been open over coronavirus. But yeah, that's one of the things I have had the privilege to, and I would say it's a privilege because I never expected to be back involved in that sector. But it is a privilege to work with people with learning disabilities. They are hugely rewarding and lovely people. And, you know, one of the things I'm investing in is young people, interestingly, getting involved in that sector, because there are incredible career opportunities for people who perhaps have struggled with mainstream education or aren't likely to find academia particularly easy. But you can easily get to a degree level qualification working in care, and just you can do your kind of qualifications on the job, and but you're getting paid the whole time and you're having a really rewarding experience. So it's one of those jobs you were saying earlier about people maybe going into it because they feel it's a more rewarding role than a well-paid role, because it's, I'm not gonna lie, you're never gonna be a millionaire, but it is fantastically rewarding.
I always ask whoever I'm interviewing about the kind of best day and the worst day, just to kind of give a real balanced view of what it's like in a profession. So can you give an example of a really good day at work where you thought, yeah, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing?
Yeah, so I think a really good day is where I actually remember a couple of months ago, I hired somebody for our company who had gone to several job interviews, hadn't got anywhere, didn't have any qualifications really to speak of, you know, had very limited experience, but I could just see that they were a really caring, loving, nurturing person, and I wanted to give them a chance. And they were so delighted to be given a job with us that they were so overwhelmed, and they still work for us now. And they're fantastic, as a, you know, and that's a really good day when you feel like you've had the opportunity to invest in somebody that otherwise wouldn't have that chance. I would say an example of a really bad day is, like, so I say hiring and firing isn't all the be all and end all of my job, but I would say they're the best and the worst parts of my job. So the days when I have to make the decisions or support somebody else, like a client, to make the decision to let somebody go, they're a bad day. And especially I do a lot of redundancies for clients because it's obviously easier for me. I think people think it's easier for me to have those conversations so that then they're not necessarily having them with colleagues and friends that they've worked with. So I have had a day where I did several redundancy consultations in one day. And that was a day where I went home and had a really large glass of wine. Because even though it's, I don't know them and I'm never going to see that person again, it's still not a nice conversation to have. So yeah, it's, but it swings around abouts.
So what about an average day?
So yeah, a Monday possibly would look like kind of just catching up on the weekend, checking in with my teams, making sure they're all well and they had good weekends and everybody's ready for the week ahead. And then I would just be into back-to-back normally on a Monday morning of meetings that have been scheduled the previous week. So that can be very varied. And working with learning disabilities, one of the things I'm now doing is sitting in some more strategic conversations with local authorities and local councils and local and actually local MPs to improve the welfare and the lives of people with learning disabilities in Surrey, but nationally if we can. So I sit in a lot of those meetings as well, which feels like a very different part of my world. But yeah, so lots of meetings, lots of sitting down, lots of cups of tea.
It's essential. Biscuits, yeah.
Essential, lots of biscuits.
In a way, that's with your job then, you do quite a lot of advocacy really for change. And do you feel like that's part of your role as well, to kind of not only support what is and what's there, but to kind of advance change and to make things better?
Definitely. And I definitely think, for again, it's that thing about the marginalized and learning when to speak up about it and when not to, and where I'm passionate about it. And yeah, I do think that I've fallen into that by virtue of the organisation that I represent and where I work, in speaking out for people that don't have a voice. You know, that there are people that work with us that come to our day centres who, they are non-verbal, they don't have the opportunity to speak. So it's really important that there are providers like us prepared to speak out for their needs.
Can you describe briefly, or not briefly, go into lots of detail about the sort of route that you took from school to where you are now, so in terms of qualifications or experience?
Yeah, so I think I mentioned earlier I worked in recruitment for a few months, mainly because I it was the start of wanting to really know what I wanted to do. I actually wanted to be an employment lawyer. That was where I was. So I did my degree. I did politics as a degree. And out of that, I really found the kind of legal side of politics, you know, and how law was created more interesting. So I wanted to then move into a law field. I got a place at law school, but I didn't get the right grade on my degree. So I only got a 2.2 for my degree when I was predicted a 2.1. So I didn't get into law school because they would only accept me if I got a 2.1. I felt like my world had absolutely collapsed because I decided by that point I was going to be a lawyer. That was all I wanted to do. That was all I was ever going to be. And yeah, everything just fell apart. I had no clue what I wanted to do next. And I ended up working in a friend's recruitment firm, only as a temp really, just to sort of help him out, and stayed there longer than I expected. And that's where I got into the idea of working with people more. I really liked the business environment. I loved working in a very fast-paced environment like that. And then HR kind of appealed to me as a result of wanting to see how people progressed once they'd got a job. That I missed the fact that I never caught up with people once they'd got a job. It was like, oh, bye, I won't hear from you again. And that led me to HR. And then I completed what's called a CIPD qualification, which is the Chartered Institute of Personnel Development or Professional Development. I probably should check that. But the CIPD anyway. And I did all of that qualification and I got to level 7, which is the furthest you can go. And I won an award actually for outstanding student. So having done rubbish at everything else, or like average everything else in my life, I found that I landed with this and was doing, you know, a lot better than I'd ever expected I would. So I won that award and went to this ridiculously fancy award ceremony where the guy from the National Lottery announced my name when he announced that I won, which I think was like the highlight of my life. It was so cool. And Rory Bremner, the one from from Dead Ringers,
like a medium.
Yeah, he was presenting it, which is really fun. So that was an experience. And then I thought, I think I'm pretty good at this. I think this should be like, this is definitely where I've landed as being the right path for me.
It's so interesting. I hear lots of stories of, you know, where people are saying that they think they know what they want, this is the path, and then something happens, like you say, that didn't quite get the grades, or something happens and it feels like the end of the world. But actually, that's the pivot point, right? That's the point where you're like, oh no, actually, because I'm meant to be doing this. And you will find that once you find what your kind of what your groove is, whatever, then, like, you know, the awards come and it just it
and I really wanted to be an employment lawyer. Was the field of law I was most interested in, and I do 90% of the time employment law now. So there is no difference really in, I mean, I speak to a lot of employment lawyers. I work as a consultant with a lot of employment lawyers and I do a lot of their groundwork before it gets to what they need to do.
Right.
So that there seems like I kind of am doing that anyway. But via a means that was far more accessible to me at the time and probably gives me more flexibility now in that I'm not hemmed in by being a lawyer or a legal profession.
So here's a, I do ask the sort of the money questions of people, for people who are genuinely, young people genuinely interested in how it all works financially. So is there a sort of starting salary as an HR consultant?
Yeah, so if you wanted to just get straight into HR, you could do that via, so there's the option to become an HR assistant. Now those jobs can start at anything from like, depending on the size of the organization, 18,000 a year to 25,000 a year. But they're very basic administration focused jobs. So you would largely be doing a lot of paperwork and typing out letters and filing and updating databases and all sorts of things like that. And everybody starts there. I started there. So everybody starts in that place. And then if you're at my level, which isn't what I earn because I work in adult social care, as the caveat, which I've already said is not well paid. But if you're working for a really big organization like Amazon or, you know, one of those huge multi-corporations, you could be looking at like six-figure salaries in a director of HR position. So, but then you would be managing workforces of like hundreds of thousands of people. So it comes it comes with the level of responsibility. So that's where you pitch it. You like feasibly, if you were at a top level in a medium-sized organization, realistically 60K as a salary. So that's what's achievable for sure.
If someone's listening to this and thinking, okay, this is something that I want to perhaps pursue a bit further, what would you say the sort of type of person, what sort of character traits or skills would be key for somebody who wanted to work in HR?
You have to be really organized and able to handle lots of different things almost at one time. So you might have lots of different cases or scenarios going at the same time that you know you need to know how to prioritize, which I have to do multiple times because people are people. You can't manage everything all at the same time or all in one day. So you will often have things that will take several months to resolve. So you have to kind of be able to manage that caseload. I think you have to be personable. You have to have a thick skin because you'll often be the person that's least liked as well as the most liked. So you have to be able to be, to ride that wave. And yeah, I think that's probably, they're the main features.
Yeah, and interesting what you said about, like, you could be someone's best friend and worst enemy, like in the same week type thing.
Yeah,
depending on the situation.
That is such a common thing.
So thick skin, soft heart, that kind of thing.
Yeah, 100%.
That's it. That's all my questions.
It was so fun. Thank you for having me.
There you go. Big thanks to Hannah for coming on the show and chatting to me and explaining to me what HR is all about. Really, really appreciate your time. Thank you so much, Hannah. And just a reminder that if you are interested in this type of career, if you head on over to our Instagram account, which is at Astro Zookeeper, you can see that Hannah has left us her three follow-up pieces of advice. So do check those out. Also, I'd really appreciate it if you could rate and review our podcast on wherever you're listening to this, as it really does help other people find us. And of course, thanks to you for listening.